Hey everyone, this is online editor Emma Prestwich, and I just want to welcome you to this 20th episode of the Eye Opener podcast. In this episode, we talk to two female students here at Ryerson who are looking to start up a men's issues group on campus. They've already received quite a crazy reaction. The RSU has pretty much preempted the ratification of their group in their eyes by introducing an amendment to their women's issues bylaws that pretty much make the issues that this group are going to be discussing against RSU policy. And there's almost 50 comments on our website about this story. The shit's pretty crazy, so we brought these two girls in to talk with some of us. We also talked about some other cool things that we think you might like, including drinking and how lazy we all are. So, hope you enjoy it, and have a great day!
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Okay. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this now 20th episode of the Eye Opener podcast. I've been mislabeling our past ones, but this is the actual 20th episode. My name is Emma Prestwich, and I'm the web editor here at the Eye Opener. And today I'm here with...
I'm Dasha Zalitza, and I'm the photo editor at the Eye Opener.
I'm Sarah Dalgiello. I'm the features editor at the Eye.
I'm Sean Wetzler, and I'm the news editor.
And we are also joined by two guests today who can introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Sarah Santosh. I'm a second-year biology student here at Ryerson.
Hi, I'm Anjana. I'm a second-year student at Ryerson studying economics.
And Anjana and Sarah are here today with us to talk about an issue that's gained a lot of traction, I guess we could say, around campus. The two of them are part of a team of Ryerson students wanting to start a men's issues group on campus. We first wrote about this last week in our last week's issue of the Eye Opener, and it already has almost 50 comments on our website. So people clearly feel strongly, one way or the other, about this issue. Our first story last week covered the start of the group, and maybe Sean can talk a little bit about the coverage that we've done so far.
Well, I guess men's issues first got on everybody's radar last year when there were protests at U of T over Speaker Ian Dwyer, who had come to the campus to talk about men's issues. And a lot of people, I guess, interpreted what he was doing as basically directly working against women's rights.
May I interject for a moment? The speaker's name was
Dr. Warren Farrell,
and Ian Dwyer was the organizer of the group.
Thank you. Thank you.
For the Canadian Association for
Equality.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, a lot of people were concerned that this men's rights movement, or whatever you want to dub it, was working directly against the women's rights movement, which obviously upsets a lot of people. And that received a lot of coverage in the media, and now here at Ryerson, we've got a group of students who are trying to start a men's issues group. So, so far, I guess the group hasn't fully been created yet. It's in the process where they're applying to the RSU for, I guess we would call it a license, exactly. Where they will be officially recognized as a campus group, but some policy that was passed at the most recent Board of Directors meeting may work against you guys. I don't know if you've heard from the RSU yet.
Yes, specifically, as I was reading the changes to the policy, the one that stood out to me that would probably pose most of an issue is it can't promote the idea or the existence of misandry. And for those of you who don't know what misandry is, it's a relatively modern term that came about 10 years ago in a few books looking at the issue. And an author kind of dubbed this term misandry. It's essentially the opposite of misogyny. It essentially means to hate men, as opposed to think men are superior. So the RSU has passed this that no group can support the idea that misandry is something that exists. So obviously a men's issues group might support that, you know, so that you can see where that could butt heads.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, do you want to talk a little bit about the, I guess, the ideas behind the formation of the group, what its goals were?
Yes. This whole objective of the group that we're trying to form is we want to address men's issues, and we want to do it from an educational point of view. We're not pushing one viewpoint over another. We're not anti-feminism in any way, shape, or form. We welcome all views. We could discuss the feminist perspectives on men's issues. We're open to that, but we also want to include other perspectives that may not align with the feminist perspective, and that's what we want to just have on campus, this group that can discuss and focus on men's issues and educate the Ryerson student body about men's issues that aren't addressed in other groups. There is no other group here on Ryerson right now that specifically focuses on men's issues. There are groups for women, for minorities, for disabled students, but there are none for men.
Now, when you're saying men's issues, could you elaborate on which issues you're speaking of?
Sure. Men's issues can range from anything from boys' education, men's health, violence, suicide, families, custody cases, anything really related to men. And it is related to men, but this could apply to everyone. Everyone has men in their lives that they're related to, like husbands, fathers, brothers, and it does relate in every way, shape, or form. Like if you have, if you know someone, a close friend of yours is going through a divorce or whatever, and he's fighting for the custody of his child, and the court favors the mother over the father, and strictly because she's the mother and he's the dad, and he's seen as a source of revenue instead of a role model for the child, basically.
That is actually quite common, yeah. The
yeah. The
custody statistics are actually highly favorable to women than they are
it
to
is.
Men.
Mm.
Suicide rates are also much higher for men
yes.
than
Yes, divorced
are for
women. Men have a very, very high suicide rate. And
and
they don't
people,
cope well at all with their divorce.
Yeah.
And
so it's dropout rates as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
And some people would call that systemic sexism, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
other communities would say no, men can't feel sexism because, or they can't receive sexism or experience sexism because they are the elite, you
yeah.
know, in the structure. So what do you guys think about that?
That's one perspective, and we're not saying that perspective is wrong. We're just saying that there are other perspectives out there that might not agree with how men aren't victims of that men are perpetrators of sexism and they cannot be victims of sexism and misandry. We believe that having all the viewpoints open for discussion is the better deal than rather legislating one viewpoint and saying all the other viewpoints cannot be discussed on campus. It's not right. Universities are supposed to be open places for discussion, and civil discussion, we emphasize civil discussion amongst students. It's like a marketplace of ideas. Students see an idea or a viewpoint, and they'll judge for themselves whether they think that viewpoint is right or not. You can say, oh yes, men's issues, really, it's nothing but BS, and, you know, feminism is the way, and, you know, at the end of the day, that's the decision, and we respect that, but some students might not agree with feminism, and they say, you know, maybe there is another explanation for this, but I'm not happy with what feminism offers me, and I'd like to have another viewpoint offered, and, you know, it doesn't happen, because on campus, it's feminism, and feminism is the only viewpoint that's allowed on campus, and it's just not right.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think about the fact you were saying that it is a group that would encourage all viewpoints? What do you think about the fact that it's pretty much been painted as the antithesis to feminism? The commentary that we've seen, at least, has either been supporting the concept of this group or dismissing it based on the premise that it's the opposite of feminism.
I've read through the comments, and the comments that weren't in agreement with this group, basically, the gist of them said that we were a men's rights group and that we were going to somehow negate the work towards equality for women, we are absolutely not a men's rights group. We emphasize that in the article, and the article even stated that we are not a men's rights group. We welcome both men and women, and we want to have that discussion. And we are trying to go for an educational approach to this. We're not saying that one viewpoint is superior over the other. We're not enforcing anything. And we just want to have basically just debate, civil discourse, basically, yeah.
I think what's interesting is the idea that, fighting for, acknowledging that one group has difficulty finding equality, the idea that that somehow takes away from another group's play for equality as I'm a feminist. I'm a happy feminist.
Yeah.
I identify that way.
But it's not a zero-sum
game.
Trying to address men's issues isn't going to take away from feminism.
If you're going to fight for equality, you have to fight for equality for everyone. Otherwise, you're not fighting for equality. You're fighting for privilege, is the way that I see it. And there's nothing right about that. You know, it's like saying that fighting for black rights would somehow draw back or slow the progress for indigenous rights. You know, it wouldn't. It's two causes. Both causes have valid needs that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
And they're different needs from each other in some cases. And in some cases, they're similar. But, you know, nobody's going to say, oh, no, well, they had a harder time historically, so you don't get the right to have problems now. You know, that's not the way it works.
It's not egalitarian.
Yeah. No. The thing is, the student, RSU, they have this viewpoint and how they want to approach, handle student groups. They think that women do need to have their voices heard and not silenced. And I totally agree with that. We're not against that at all.
Well, I certainly hope so. You're here talking
So. And the ironic thing is that I'm a woman and my VP is a woman, and we can't have this group. It's not a coincidence that this happened 2 days before our meeting with the Student Groups Committee, and they did this behind closed doors without informing us, without even giving us a chance to present our case to them. They didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to hear any arguments from us, and they just went ahead and bulldozed and pushed the amendment further to their policy through, and without even giving us a chance to try to present our case. And you know, if we were given the chance and we presented our case and they give us legitimate reasons why we probably shouldn't be ratified as a steering group, we would have been happy with that because it's fair and just, and we went through the process and it was fair, but this isn't fair at all.
So how does that make you feel?
At first, when I heard about it, I was upset and I was angry because I believe, it's morally wrong. What they're trying to do is they're trying to legislate equality through their policies, through amendments, and I don't believe you can legislate equality. You have to approach it from an educational point of view. You have to give people the chance to formulate their own opinions. People aren't, dumb. We're in university. We're all supposed to be critical thinkers. They're spoon-feeding this ideology to us, and we have to accept it, or else, you know, we don't have a choice. And
well, you can accept it, or you cannot belong to a group
basically
on campus.
Basically, that's how they've treated this issue. And you talk to people on campus, and you ask them, are you happy with RSU? And they're really not, RSU, how they handle it. They're very entrenched in how they, their politics. They have their own way of dealing with things, and there needs to be some kind of structural change in how they deal with their students, because I'm paying them. They're receiving a salary from the university, and part of my tuition goes to RSU. And right now, I'm not happy at all with how they're supposed to be representing me and everyone else at Ryerson and the student body. They're not doing a very good job of it.
I think the viewpoint that seems to persist, if I'm analyzing it right, is that that many people who dismiss the idea of this group seem to believe that feminism addresses men's issues within it. I think Marwa, who's the VP Equity, said in one of her comments that she felt that feminism is about finding equality for men and women within the lens of I guess, historically healing issues that women have had with being disadvantaged but still representing men. So that seems to be the lens that the RSU approaches these issues from.
That's so silly to me, though, because when you think of that critically, it's, yes, maybe that is the intent of feminism, and, you know, for some feminists, that is the intent, for myself included, that's the intent of feminism, is, you know, equality amongst sex and gender. But if that were realistically the case, then these men's awareness groups wouldn't exist. They would have no cause to. You know, so obviously, even though that's the intent, that's not what's happening. So you can address an issue in an idealistic way, like an idealistic issue with an idealistic solution, but that idealistic solution isn't going to work for the reality of the situation if it doesn't line up ideally.
No, if they feel like the RSU feels like they're morally obligated to enforce this ideology onto the student body, it's gonna be dangerous to, like, the liberties of the students, because it's like personal freedoms of the students will be encroached upon when the RSU believes that they're, like, morally obligated to push this agenda on us. And even though we might say, oh, I don't agree with it, we're gonna have to be, like, forced to accept it because they think it is, like, the morally right perspective, and it's just not right. Like, that's not how you conduct a democratic society, and student campuses should be an example, a shining beacon of, like, democracy, because, like, we're the future of the country, and how they're running it right now, it's more close to, like, a corrupt bureaucracy than an example of a good government body.
Now, have you guys heard from the RSU whether or not this policy specifically is going to impact your ability to ratify the club? Because we were speculating that that could be an issue, but have they given you an official response yet?
We've gotten all the response we need from this paper that you gave us, that lists the amendments to the policy on women's issues. Everything that they have here is a direct target to our club, and if you just read it, if you just go through it, it's a direct attack on our club, even though they didn't mention our name or cafe, which we're affiliated with. You don't have to be, like, smart to know that it is towards your club. And it was 2 days before our meeting with the student groups committee. It's not a coincidence. I'm not naive to believe that, oh yeah, maybe it was what they wanted all along, and it just so happened that it happened right before the formation of this group, right before the ratification of this group. And it's really, like, I don't know, they might be right, you know, men's issues might be just a fluke topic, like, it might not even be a real topic, and at the end of the day, like, who's to say if women's voices are being silenced, and, you know, men's rights is a completely wrong perspective, but, like, you have to allow that to be judged by everyone. You can't supersede the discussion and say, you know, I'm not allowing this. You
that's
have to have everyone.
Why can't we discuss it?
Yeah. That the small number of people governing, like, running RSU can't legislate, like, what the rest of the student body here at Ryerson has to, like, go through. Like,
or what we care about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very interesting. The RSU has been playing that role for a long time, filtering the discussion, I guess, in that way. So it's, yeah, it raises an interesting question about the role of a student union, and are they allowed to do that? Is there anything preventing them from doing that? But it's clearly not working in the favor of your group, for example. The what I find really interesting, and I think what drew many people to the story, was that it's two women who are involved in setting up this group. So can you give us some background, I guess, on why you decided to start it?
The thing is, I haven't always been this concerned about men's issues. It happened recently, but, like, I've noticed the trend that men's issues is a marginalized topic. It's not discussed. There is a stigma around it. People automatically think it's a men's rights issue, that it's gonna somehow attack women's rights, and it almost elicits a Pavlovian reaction. You've seen the comments, and some of them are really horrible, and we just want to change that. I want to be able to conduct debate without having to resort to like fierce oppositions, almost almost incendiary tones, and having people just to like formulate their own, be able to critically think and formulate their own opinions without having to submit to this mainstream ideologies. You know, university is a time where you find yourself politically, and you formulate what your viewpoints are, and you think for yourself, like, is this correct? Is the mainstream opinion correct? Is there something wrong with how this governing body is conducting themselves? And right now, we're trying to do that. We're trying to offer a different perspective, and hopefully we are able to form this group here at Ryerson.
Did the two of you just get together one day, and the idea had been percolating in your brains for a while, and you thought, why not start this, or was it with other students, or?
Well, I started, I met Sarah through one of the cafe members, Justin Chortier, and I was doing, I wanted to volunteer, do some volunteering over the summer, and I was looking, going over volunteertoronto.ca, and I saw this men's awareness issues group, and I became very interested in it, and I Googled them, and and they were looking for a research volunteer, which is what I applied for the position of. And then Justin connected me to Sarah because he wanted a group to be started at Ryerson. So,
but it was my idea to start this group. I did feel like there was a need to have a group focused on men's issues.
Yeah.
And it was, like, our initiative to have this group. Like, me and Jenna got together and we tried to formulate this group.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that seeing a woman's face on the story, that draws a lot of people to it, because it's, like you said, historically it's painted as a men's rights kind of thing. So yeah.
No, I don't believe that like one's sex or gender should dictate what your views and your politics are. Like, it should be regardless. It shouldn't be relevant. Like, but I'm not naive, and I am aware that being female and trying to form a men's issues group isn't exactly something you see every day. But like, I'm happy. Like, this is what I believe is right, and I'm not afraid to go out there and like express my opinion about this.
It'll be interesting to see what happens. Do you have any sense in your mind? Do you feel like it will happen? I just know that the RSU will.
Right now, the chances of RSU approving this group is pretty much like nil. What they did was disingenuous, the way they conducted themselves. They say they're for equality, and their actions say otherwise. But there are ways to circumvent RSU. We can go to Ryerson University directly and talk with administration and say, look, RSU isn't doing their job of representing student body, and present our case. We can go to different faculties and try to formulate a group through them and receive funding from the faculties instead of Ryerson Student Union.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a hopeless case. But just going through this, we're going through the process. That's how what they outlined, the process of going through formulating a student group. We're following all the rules. We did all the paperwork. Everything was done. And we just want a fair trial. Like, yeah, we want a fair chance, you know. But, like, at the end of the day, if they say no, we'll ask why. And if they give us a really flimsy excuse, then we have that to hold against them. But, you know, what they did was like really underhanded, and it's just.
I just think that interesting things happen when you punish for crimes not yet committed.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is. It is interesting that that ideology seems to permeate all the this most recent amendment,
mm-hmm.
and it is very interesting. It's definitely an issue that's gained a lot of people's attention. Thank you very much, guys.
No, thank you for having us on this podcast.
We
really appreciate the coverage that you've given us, and you know, We're really thankful for, like, allowing us to just voice our opinions. I talked a lot, and you had to, like, sit through me, like, ranting.
No, we were
basically.
Happy to hear
it. No,
it
was
great.
Interesting commentary, for sure. Yeah,
absolutely, and thank you very much for taking the time to come speak with us. We
thank you for having us.
It was our pleasure.
Thanks.
All
have
right.
A great night.
Thank you.
Send shivers down my spine. Body's aching all the time. Goodbye, everybody. I got to go. Gonna leave it all behind and face the truth. Mama! Sometimes wish I'd never been born at all.
Okay.
Please tell me you recorded
that. Yeah, we need to start talking now.
Are we recording?
Am I pausing
yes.
us?
Yes,
okay.
Right. The song is amazing but long.
It is very long.
But I really like that part. Oh shit, Audio Slave just came on.
Audio Slave. We don't want to transition into that.
Be yourself. It's a good song.
No, that was good.
Sorry,
that was good
indeed.
Bonding. I appreciated the fact that we did that together. That was nice.
Oh god, does that actually go in?
Alright, so
it
what
is,
else
it
do
is.
You want to talk about?
This is all we need.
We were talking earlier about the fact that it is so sad. We covered in our paper this week the fact that Metro, the Metro at Mutual and Gould, is now longer open 24 hours. This was probably the most overplayed story in the history of Ryerson journalism papers. Okay, not the most overplayed, that's an exaggeration. It's an exaggeration of an exaggeration. But it is interesting how strongly everyone's reacting to it. Even though we think it's silly, it's still true that we, as students who live on a downtown campus, who live close to a downtown campus with services in, you know, within our reach in every direction all the time, the prospect of having to walk 7 more minutes to go to the Metro College Park seems terrible.
It's just, like, such a statement to our immense over-entitlement of, oh no, I want this grocery store and all of their employees to stay open 24 hours and work 24 hours because I like the convenience of being able to just go out at whatever time. It's like, shut the fuck up. Like, sorry. Like, I don't care. I don't have any sympathy for that mindset of, oh, this is mildly less convenient for me. And so we've got an Esso down the street. If it's just for, like, energy drinks, like, there's an Esso down the street, and there's a newly opened 7-Eleven in the opposite direction. It's just on, like, Gould on Young. Right? Like, right there, not much further, just go for a stroll, get some exercise, some fresh air, it's okay. You know, like, I just don't, like, I'm immensely amused by how much play this is getting.
I'm actually gonna disagree in that I don't think it's actually that overplayed. I don't think it's that big a deal to students. I mean, the Sonian ran at bottom of their page one, but we ran it as, like, basically a standalone photo, and when we were writing that story, I went and I did Streeters trying to get student feedback, and it took me a good, like, 45 minutes to find anyone who cared. Like, 90% of the students I talked to were just like, I'm a commuter. If I do groceries, it's at home. It doesn't affect me. I don't care. I don't shop there. I've bought one drink ever at Metro. Like, it doesn't matter. There's so many other places in my food. Like, nobody cared. I finally went into Pittman, and which is the residence, and talked to some res students and got one of them to tell me I'm devastated. But, like, one person.
Yes.
I was running Streeters for, like, 45 minutes.
And,
like,
that person, whoever you are, I think you're an asshole.
However, it did impress me. The organization of that one commuter student you quoted in the story who said he's only ever bought one drink there, that he buys all his food at home, I just thought, man, you are so organized.
He's
you must pack your lunch every day. You are on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were all devastated because we go to Metro at 3 o'clock in the morning while we're working late nights all the time. But I don't think that many students are actually that upset. The people that are, it's a little bit ridiculous. I agree, but, like, I think that most of campus is reasonable, and they're going to be like, I don't really do groceries at 4 o'clock in the morning, so I don't care.
Or if I do currently, I think I can live by changing my schedule a bit so I can get my groceries done when the store's open, if I absolutely must go to that location.
And when I heard it wasn't going to be 24 hours anymore, I figured it was going to be, like, more like normal business hours, but it's, like, only closed 7 hours.
Yeah.
Midnight to 7 a.m. Like, those are still
pretty long. That is later than any
hours.
Other grocery store.
Yeah.
Most
really
grocery
is.
Stores are closed at 10 p.m. or 9 p.m.
There's one, the one by my place closes at 11, but yeah, like, midnight's pretty late.
It is.
It's not that big a deal.
But I always want to do my grocery shopping at 5:30 in the morning. The early bird gets the worm.
Well, you are also an asshole.
No, it's true. We should let these employees have at least 5 hours of sleep so that they can have an hour to close the store, then come back to service us.
Yes, because
spoiled
the people
at
Metro, they only have one roster of employee, and they work the entire time at Metro.
I swear, there are always the same employees there. There was a new girl there the other day, and I was surprised. It's, oh, what's that woman's name? I forget.
You're on
she's an older.
Basis with the employees at Metro?
No, it's an
Emma
older.
Thanks.
Emma, this
the streetcar when she gets
you.
Off of it.
I do
like,
that. Don't you do that?
You thank the streetcar?
Yeah.
I never thank
well,
the streetcar.
No,
let's clarify this.
Getting off the back of the streetcar.
Dan, I said thank you to the driver. I did not
you
thank
the
streetcar. Jeff tells this story wrong. Our BizTech editor tells the story of me saying thank you to the streetcar. That may have been a joke. When I have seriously said goodbye to something, it's to the driver. And the reason I do that is because I'm from Victoria.
No, I do the same thing.
You're
in
a polite human
no,
being,
I
that's
that
fine,
too.
But you are the most polite human being.
I've never
to
thanked
To the extent, the most polite human being I've ever met, to the extent that when I was told she thanked an inanimate vehicle, I believed it.
It's
it
true.
Wasn't too far a stretch because you were so
maybe that's
polite.
The true point of that story is
yeah.
that everyone believed that I could have done it.
Yeah, it would
so,
not have shocked me.
The moral of this story is that Emma is the best person on the planet and Dasha is an asshole.
Yes. This
I
is what we're taking away
I
from
quit.
This podcast.
I quit.
Dasha's currently drinking wine out of a artistic
snowman mug.
I left my beer out there.
So go get your beer. Free Frank.
Soundbite.
Sound. Door opening. Sarah getting beer. Now you know what we do. Speaking of drinking, a really depressing story came out in the Star yesterday. It was a study.
I'm gonna make like toot noises while I get back into my seat. I'm sorry.
I like that you call them toot noises. That redeems you.
The chair sounds tooty.
Oh, it's a CAMH study. CAMH is the Center for Addiction and Mental Health. That's here in Toronto. And the study found out that Canadians drink 50% more than the people of any other country in the world.
Well, we're all drinking something right now, except for you, Emma. But I do believe Charles is non-alcoholic.
Yeah, I'm drinking a latte. It found out that Canadians drink the most in the world?
No, we drink 50% more on average than most other countries in the world based on our consumption. And we are in the top 6, I think, of heavyweights, including Russia, the UK, Germany, Italy, and Spain.
That's
fuck yeah.
That's hilarious because
it's not apparently
a tiny country. Like, our population is tiny, so.
But we have to have something to do.
Exactly.
We're just
yeah.
have
like
priorities
straight.
Let's
just get drunk.
It's
not
true.
Living in the city. I mean, living in the city, we have a little bit less of an excuse for alcoholism. But I think we also simultaneously, we have less of an excuse because there's more to do. We don't have the boredom excuse. But simultaneously, there's a wealth more bars and clubs and events that include drinking. And you just kind of get into the habit of, oh, yeah, okay, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, I drink. And or if you're us, Tuesdays, you drink. Wednesdays, you sometimes will drink.
Mondays
you'll
Sundays.
Drink.
Sundays.
We drink a lot, is the
yeah.
point. But,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
it's,
we're overworked.
I don't know. I think it's the, you know, it's not to the extent, it's not a huge problem. I think that everybody's happy when they're drinking. You know, we're not an angry place.
No, it's true. It's not like the former Soviet Union where we have to overcome generations of bitterness and tears. And
that's
starvation. But I think.
Dasha, can you tell us about generations of bitterness and tears in your home country?
That's why I'm at the bottom of a bottle right now.
I think Sarah's right, though. While we don't have the boredom excuse, I think people in the city drink as much as people in rural areas because drinking forms such a big part of our social events.
Yeah, it's just that we drink while doing things, whereas there's nothing to do, so they drink is the difference between the rural or suburban and the urban areas.
Drinking
so,
is the activity.
Multitasking is basically what we're actually getting at.
Well, we're all sitting here in this office accomplishing things, and
sure.
We've cracked open beer, so.
I think it has to do with profession, too. Like, journalists tend to be more stressed out people than, like, I don't know,
medical doctors.
Programmers. No, I'd say the medical doctors are more stressed than
you.
Oh,
yeah, but they can't be drinking on the job.
Yeah, that's the
that's
thing.
Yes.
We can still
with our work,
actually.
We'll do our interviews, we'll go through the day, and then we'll enjoy a beer, a glass of wine while we're transcribing, or while we're, writing out a rough draft of what we're doing, and so it's, nobody's life is at stake. Nobody's under your scalpel, you're just kind of toying around with your story flow. It's something that you can do while you've got a drink in hand.
It's very true, and sometimes it helps when you're speaking to people you've never met before. Drinking can sometimes, moisten the conversation.
I certainly never.
I don't think I've ever done it.
I've never ever gone to after a drink or two or something like that.
I've never done that. One thing I have done, I imagine it would. I've never actually attempted it. There was one night last. I don't think I could do that either morally, but there was one night where we had been drinking with the eye opener, and then there were some firefighters in front of the Image Arts building, so we decided to be roving news team and go over and find out what was going on. And we were fairly drunk, but that didn't constitute an actual interview. I don't think I could do it either. But
was
no,
I feel like I was there. We had a night just like that.
Last semester.
That's
but
true.
We
there
had
was
fire
that story.
Last semester, but ended up happening. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, sometimes it'll happen by fluke where, we're in the office having a few beers and, something is going on outside and we have to run out to it. But or then there's Jeff last year who was on his way home from the bar and was shit drunk. And there was this fight breaking out at Ram Pub Night that he was passing by. And he's just shit-faced and belligerent. And he's got his phone out and he's filming these guys getting arrested or something. And they were telling him to put his phone away. And he said, I'm student press. I have a right to be here. Because he was just... And then some other editors showed up and told him to just go home.
It was very enterprising of our Byzantech editor that he assumed responsibility for covering this event, even though he clearly wasn't capable of doing so.
Yeah, his instinct was, oh, something is happening. I must pull out my phone and document it. Yeah, that's good instinct there, Even when
true.
You're shit-faced, if that's your first... If that's your go-to thought, then you're succeeding in life, I think.
True journalist, it's true.
Yeah. But as for Canadians in general, I don't know, I don't think that a drinking culture is necessarily a bad thing. I think that too much of anything is a bad thing. So, if it's, people are drinking too much, yes, that's a bad thing. Alcoholism is a bad thing. And absolutely no pun intended, and on a more sober note, alcoholism is bad. It destroys people's lives, it destroys families, it just fucks up your finances. It's a very, very bad thing to do. It's
not unless you drink cheap beer.
Addiction. Well, even if you drink too much cheap beer, it's not so cheap anymore, But I think for, the average Canadian, the standard student, it's not to the point where it's affecting your life and you're shaking without your daily drink. I don't think it's that extent. Sure, we drink more. Maybe we can tolerate more. We've got one American editor. But we've been training because when she first came here, she couldn't drink at all. Now she still can't keep up with us, but when she goes home, she can drink better than her American friends, and they're very impressed with her.
That's an important thing.
Exactly. So she's showing up the Americans. She's not Canadian standard quite yet, but we're working on that.
We take our beer very seriously here.
And our bellies.
There was one infamous party last year in which I drank Bud Light, and I never lived it down, and I probably never will.
And nor should you, because you picked Bud Light.
Technically, Tapper.
In my defense, someone else picked Bud Light for me. But...
Well, that explains why he's managing the Ryersonian now, doesn't it?
I realize you can't see this, dear listeners, but iOpener alumnus Ian Van Dale is being really creepy. There's a tiny strip of window beside the door to our general manager's office, and he's inserting his face in there, and he looks like a creepy homeless man.
But
he can't
looks
hear
like
this
a homeless
either.
Man most of the time.
That's
anyways.
True. He looks like a homeless man. That's what we want to say.
You see, he's got quite the beard.
Oh, I think he can hear us. He's smiling.
And he has like the gloves with the fingers in them.
Yeah.
That's
the
true.
With the lax fingers.
Yeah.
Oh, he's drinking Sleeman's Cream Ale, so we can certify him as homeless.
Should we invite him in?
We could invite him in.
Ben.
Sure.
Yeah,
Daniel?
Ben will have lots to say about alcohol.
Ben, come in.
Ben, come join the podcast.
Podcast
bunker.
Everyone, this is Ian Van Dale. He is a former business and technology editor and still comes around to help us out copy editing and whatnot. He's pretty great. We call him Van. You can call him Van, but, you know, he's Ian, I guess.
Hello.
Don't call him Ian.
Don't call
no
him
one calls
Ian.
Him
yeah, don't
Ian.
Do that.
So right now we're... Oh, sorry, Emma.
No, you go for it.
Right now we're just discussing, CAMH came out with a study that Canada as a country drinks more than 50% of all countries.
We drink 50% more on
so,
average
yeah.
than
most
other
countries.
Ah, we're better than them.
That's what we were discussing, and we were talking about the fact that Canada's a mix of big urban centers and rural areas, but we think that people who live in big cities drink just as much, for different reasons maybe, but you're from a small town. Most of the people here, Sarah, Sean, you are from small towns, but you haven't noticed a decline in drinking just because you moved to Toronto.
Actually, a degree of decline. I will say the people I grew up with, maybe it's just them. I mean, it's entirely possible it's just them because, well, let's be honest, they're not terribly good at adult. They're not terribly good at adult life. But, yeah, I actually find that... Definitely in volume, if maybe not in frequency, people in Toronto drink less often. Or less total, I should say.
Mm-hmm. So drink as often, but less total, or drink more often, but less in total.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
A lot of
yeah,
my friends will put down a 12-pack or, you know, most of a 2.6 when they drink, and this is my Alberta friends. Now, I haven't seen anyone here decide to demolish 2.6 by themselves, so I think...
My birthday party last year?
Minus very select occasions. I'm just saying, on your average weekend, I don't see you toting, you know, a 2.6 of Sambuca and just swinging right from it.
Yeah, it is a special birthday delight that I indulge in.
Sambuca.
It wasn't
not
Sambuca, it was whiskey.
It's interesting, though, not to get super dark, but I think that... Student culture maybe
dark.
Perpetuates a different kind of alcoholism in the sense that we find it harder to be part of, like, I think that maybe younger people in general find it harder to be part of social occasions without drinking.
Yeah.
I think there's a
yeah
general thing in society that young people drink more than the rest of their culture. I'm pretty sure that's not unique to Canada.
Well.
Young people go out and shit-faced around the world.
Go out and shit-faced.
Go out
they
and
go
shit-faced.
Out and shit-faced. We have made that
a
verb.
Want to go out and shit some face tonight.
Ryerson students, you have witnessed the birthing of a new verb.
We have verbed it. We have verbed it.
We just verbed the shit out of that face.
I do think it's true to a certain extent. When you are a 45-year-old and you live at home and you never put yourself in awkward social situations, you never end up at a party.
I think it's an awkward social situation if you're 45 years old and you live at home.
Oh! I mean, living at your own home that you purchased or rented yourself, yes. But that would be terrible, too.
I think it's just the degree of responsibility also. You know, most 45-year-olds own a house and have a 9-to-5 or 40-hour-a-week job, if not more hours,
mm-hmm.
depending on which class you're looking at. They've got kids to support, they've got meetings to go to, they've got chores to do, they need to keep their lawn up, and they need to, you're working on in-home renovations. They can't get up, you know, 2 days of their week hungover not wanting to do anything. They don't have the time for that, you know, whereas we do. We have all of this, you know, well, you know, most of us here at the Eye Opener work 2 to 3 jobs and then go to school as well, so we don't have a whole lot of time, but in that free time, you know, we fit in a social life where we can.
We don't have to go home
to
our children
afterwards. But we have the
ability to
do that because, you know, it's, all right, if I'm a little hungover in my 9 a.m. class and I'm not up to par, that's not a huge deal. Whereas when you're going to work the next morning and you look hungover and you smell of liquor, then that's going to affect your life because your boss is going to be pissed off about that.
Well, and the other element is the older you get. I mean, yeah, this is just a simple fact of physiology. The older you get, the more the liquor is going to affect you for a longer period. I mean... We can sit down and, you know, have a six-pack or what have you, and then the next day, okay, maybe I'm a little groggy, but I'm sure as hell not hungover. I'm not sure that most 45-year-olds can do that.
It's weird experiencing that in progress, actually. That's when I'm kind of at the state where I never, ever used to get hangovers at all. I was immune to them. It was fine. And now it's like, if I mix at all, if I, like... If I'm starting with beer, I need to stick to beer. If I'm starting with wine, I need to stick to wine. Otherwise, the next day, I am just a mess of this pounding headache and mild nausea and can't eat but must eat, and it's horrible. You know, it's weird.
Some wine?
Well, I just finished my beer, but...
Speaking of drinking in social occasions...
Again, you're an asshole, Dasha. Dasha Zolota.
No. That's interesting. I think I'm also prematurely aged as well, because I can't handle as much alcohol as I used to be able to. And my body tells me if I drink more than 2 or 3 nights a week, more than one beer, I can't function. I just have a really hard time doing anything, speaking to people, maintaining my moods. I'm pretty much 45 already, so
it
I'm doomed from now
too,
on.
I find I'm finding that interesting. Is, you know, on the few weeks this semester that I've had time to, you know, go out and party like 3-4 times a week, it's like by the end of it, like I'm not retaining information the same way I usually do. And you know, somebody will tell me something and I will forget, and I'm usually not forgetful at all. You know, so it's like I'm noticing the effects that it's having now, which is a strange.
You know what's interesting? It'll actually affect your memory as well. Like, you know.
That's so interesting.
Wait, really?
I've never heard that. I think it might be a comment on the fact that we've forgotten that alcohol actually affects your brain and kills your brain cells.
No, I don't think we've forgotten that. I think we just
disregarded it.
Disregarded
is
like,
a better word.
What isn't bad for you? Like, I don't know. It's like, I can't be like, oh, I'm not going to drink very much it's bad for you. Because I smoke. Like, I'm a smoker, you know? Like, if I'm going to give up anything, it's probably going to be the inhaled toxins that I put in my body, you know, 8 to 9 times a day, as opposed to, you know, my beer that makes my liver like, you know?
Just for you listeners, Sarah has put her arms in front of her body in a raptor arm motion and went, but
and that is what will happen to your liver if you drink, kids.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah,
public service announcement. If you feel like donating to the Stop Eye Opener Masthead Members Smoking Fund, you can bring your cash, your pennies especially, because I know you don't want those anymore.
Or your nicotine patches.
Or your nicotine patches or your cigarettes.
No, you know what this is a case of? This is just, we have taken that classic monologue from Network way too seriously. I mean, you know, he says, the air is unfit to breathe, so we breathe in tobacco smoke. The water is unfit to drink, so we drink beer. we have a lot of trouble with, you know, taking things too literally, I think, is what we've learned here.
I don't know.
Also, Dasha is an asshole.
She is an asshole. She's absolutely an
asshole.
She's
never seen Network.
She's got this hole of ass that is just this essence of her.
She just grabbed my head, just so you, like, listeners understand. She just, like, as she said, hole of ass, grabbed my head and, like, demonstrated exactly there.
On that note, that's what you should take away from this podcast, that Dasha has a hole of ass.
No, she is a hole of ass.
Oh, she is a hole of ass.
W-H-O-L-E. She is the hole that is ass.
There's something very
there's
poetic about that, I must say.
Can we fit shitface in there somewhere?
That's you. But, no, sometimes I'll think about, you know, there's a period of time in Europe where the water was too polluted to drink. It wasn't safe to drink, and so people just drank alcohol. And I often think of what that society was like for that period of time.
Well, you know what actually led them back to not just drinking alcohol? Coffee. Because you had to boil the water for it. So first, water, and then it was unfit to drink, so we went to booze, then we went to coffee. And, you know, really, I think if you look at it, that classic progression of water, alcohol, coffee has actually reversed itself for the modern gentleman or gentlewoman. It goes coffee, alcohol, oh, God, water.
Yeah, I must have water now. I am so dehydrated. My arms look like big raisins from all of my coffee and alcohol.
It really is a cycle, because after you have the water, you realize that that may have rehydrated you, but you're still exhausted, so you drink some more coffee.
Yeah.
It's the circle of life.
And then you're kind of wired, because you've been drinking so much coffee, you need to wind down, you have a drink.
Yeah, just
true.
And then, holy fuck, you're thirsty.
You realize the coffee's wearing off. Oh man, I should have should get a bit of a buzz on. It's true. The circle of death, we should call it. Anyways, be responsible or don't. And
do.
Have a good night.